Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris and Amy show hour three, but today it's John Hancock with me, Chris yes. Ranji. A final hour, and then we will have Gas House Gang at 12, Bernie, Tom, me. We'll check in with Matt Pauly, who was live at spring training, and plenty to talk about. Billikens play tonight, by the way.
They do, and so does our Missouri Tigers play tonight. And by the way, let me just point out that it is a wonderful thing that we have elected officials in this country, because elected officials have to be responsive to their people. And I have heard from St. Louis County Councilman Dennis Hancock, no relation, who was listening on the radio, and he is going to engage his staff to get a response to me from the St. Louis County Department of Revenue. And to Councilman Dennis Hancock, I say, thank you.
Well, John, it's a good thing you were on the show today.
Yes.
Because if you weren't on this show, you'd still be wondering where your money is.
That phone would be ringing.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, somebody is on it, and I hope they've lost it. So, we usually at this time, or around this time, talk to Andrew Egger, White House correspondent for The Bulwark, and he is with us now. He is also the co-author of the Morning Shots newsletter, which you should subscribe to. Andrew joins us. How's it going, sir? Not hearing Andrew at the moment. Should we try again? Do we have him or not?
Technical difficulties. Please stand by.
I hear technical. It's weird. I hear him off in the distance, but
he may be attempting to call the St. Louis County Department of Revenue.
Well, okay. See, that's the problem.
Call me on my phone.
Oh, there he is.
All right.
Can you hear me? Am I heard? Hello.
Never sounded better.
How you doing?
Ah, yes. What a relief.
So let's. Hey, Andrew. It's good to have you on. Andrew, a St. Louis native, is with us now and every week. And so tonight is the State of the Union address. I'm not exactly sure where to start here because it is I don't know if you know this or not, but we are divided as a nation. And there are some Democrats who are going to opt out of the State of the Union. They're going to a separate event, and they are calling that event the People's State of the Union. There are Democrats who are going to be bringing along Jeffrey Epstein survivors. So what do you think will happen tonight, and how do you feel about some of these members opting out?
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunately sort of like a long-standing trend now, the sort of like gradual long breakdown of just sort of normal decorum at the State of the Union. Obviously, it wasn't all that long ago that a member of Congress, for instance, heckling the president was like a major multi-day scandal. It could like define a person's political career. Now that sort of thing happens more frequently than more often than not, I guess is the way to put it. You see more of these stunts, on both sides of the aisle. You've seen it in recent years. It's all a little bit theatrical, but the whole thing is a little bit theatrical, right? I mean, it's sort of like a night of political pageantry. It's a night when the whole country sort of tunes in, or at least a much greater share of the country tunes in than typically does. So it's sort of like the biggest spotlight for basically everybody involved to sort of like get some of those good visuals, get some of those good lines in. Obviously, we're going to see that from the president tonight. He's expected to talk for quite some time. He has said it's a very long speech. His speech last year was longer than any previous given State of the Union address, even though the first speech of a president's term is not technically considered a State of the Union address, so it didn't technically break the record. We'll see if he breaks that record tonight. But yes, on the Democratic side, we're expecting to see some pretty obvious displays of discontent with the way things are going right now in some of the ways that you describe.
My button was not working.
Now we can't.
Now my
you.
Button is working. Everything is working now. A lot of the pre-information that's come out about the speech tonight indicates that the president's going to focus particularly on the economy. What do you expect to hear?
Well, this is the big question, right? Because the president's basic economic message got really upended, or at least it got got dealt a major blow just a few days ago when the Supreme Court overturned one of the big economic tent poles of his entire agenda of his first year back in office, which was these tariffs, these Liberation Day tariffs that he put on basically every country in the world back in April. Some of the rates have gone up, some of the rates have gone down, but the Supreme Court threw them all out just a few days ago as unconstitutional, and now the president is trying to put some of those back in place. Nobody really knows what the state of global trade is going to look like tomorrow or the next day or the next day. And so he's in this difficult place from a messaging point of view where there were already a lot of sort of affordability and economic concerns just out in the general public that he was that his advisors had been impressing on him more and more in recent months. You really need to address people's concerns here. You really need to talk to people about the economy. It's not like the economy has been awful, but it certainly has not been sort of growing in the sort of golden age leaps and bounds that he had promised in terms of inflation coming down and jobs going up. Jobs were pretty stagnant throughout much of last year. People still have concerns about high prices, things like that. And so one thing he had been saying all along is sort of trust the process. These tariffs are going to do what I'm saying they're going to do. They're going to make us rich. They're going to make America hot. They're going to make everybody really, really happy. We just got to wait for them to work. Now it's a little harder for him to make that message because a lot of these tariffs are gone. He can't really just say, you know, blame the Supreme Court. Don't blame me if things don't go well, because he's the president. You know, people ultimately see that the buck stops with him for a lot of these things. So that's the big question is, like, can he sketch out some sort of forward looking talk on the economy here, or will he mostly be dwelling on sort of these grievances against the Supreme Court and against his political enemies and these folks when it comes to the economy tonight?
With Andrew Eger here on KMOX and with the speech tonight, I imagine that people are sort of moving away from the Olympic hockey thing. And I know that people have been talking a lot about Cash Patel being there in the locker room, pounding beers and wondering how that happened or why that happened, why he was invited, and whether or not that trip was solely about that instead of there being some sort of security conference, which he says is why he was in Milan. What do you are people moving away from that? Or are they still pretty focused on what happened? And what is your opinion of it?
I mean, ultimately, it's not that important of a story in the grand scheme of things. It's a very funny story. I mean, like it is, it's pretty transparent. Cash Patel, he's a hockey fan. He tweeted out 8 months ago or something. He's like, I'll see you guys over there in Milan. So he has been planning to go to these Olympics for quite some time. The FBI director always has to take the FBI jet when he goes anywhere. That's just standard procedure. Obviously, that costs some taxpayer money. He reimburses a little of it when he uses it for personal travel. Certainly not all the costs that are involved. That's kind of okay. I mean, the FBI director is allowed to take personal travel within reason at his discretion. Cash Patel has used it a lot more than most. I mean, there have been a lot of stories like this over the last number of months, him going to, you know, see his girlfriend, who's a country singer, perform in Nashville, now going over to sort of yuck it up with the men's hockey team over there. The weird thing about this is that, one, it's sort of an unforced error. You might expect that some people up higher in the administration would be like, hey, look, this is not a very good look for us. Maybe hold off, maybe hold back a little bit. We plainly have not seen that. There was no directive from Pam Bondi, the attorney general, to Cash Patel after those earlier news stories about his travel to say, hey, maybe cool it. Maybe don't go to Milan. Maybe don't be caught on a lot of live streams celebrating in the room. And then the other thing has been the really forcible pushback from his press office, basically calling all of this stuff fake news, saying that, you know, we can't believe you would insinuate that he's over there to watch the Olympics when he himself tweeted that he would be over there to watch the Olympics months before any of these other supposed meetings were scheduled. And that like this is all some fake news media controversy. It's not the biggest story in the world, but it is a fair question whether this is a good use of U.S. taxpayer dollars to get the FBI director over there, to get his whole, you know, retinue and all those people over there, and just a good use of his time as a guy who's, you know, running a pretty important federal law enforcement agency. But I obviously it's not, you know, front of mind. I don't expect the president to bring it up in the speech tonight.
We are enjoying our weekly visit with Andrew Eger. He's the White House correspondent and co-author of the Morning Shots newsletter for The Bulwark. He's joining us via Zoom this morning. One of the stories, there's so many from the White House, But is the matter of this $10 billion lawsuit that Donald Trump and his kids have filed against the federal government because of what he says was the illegal releasing of his income tax information. Is this thing going to happen?
Well, that's the question, right? I mean, I think it's fair to say not just that he says it was an illegal release. I mean, the leak was not legal. I mean, it was sort of a illicit distribution of records that should have remained classified at the IRS, not just Trump's, but a number of prominent tax returns there. So it's not like he doesn't have a real beef about that. He's perfectly within his rights to be unhappy that it happened. I think what a lot of people correctly point out about this is sort of the self-dealing nature of it. I mean, the president is bringing this lawsuit against his own IRS. His own IRS is going to have to, and his own Treasury Department are going to have to defend it against his lawsuit, and in theory should make the government's best case that the government should not have to hand over this money. But as we have repeatedly seen all through the Trump administration, there is no wall of even the appearance of political separation or political independence between any of the agencies and the president himself. Not that the Treasury Department has ever been like a particularly independent agency. It's not like the Justice Department or something like that. It's there to implement the president's economic policy. But the idea that the president would be specifically seeking this money and that Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, would be working really hard to prevent him from getting it. Nobody really thinks that's the way this is going to work, right? And so the basic thing you boil it down to is, doesn't this basically amount to the president just helping himself to $10 billion
of
cash from the government?
I mean, and, it's $10 billion.
And maybe it won't happen. Like it could not happen. I mean, he could decide it's not worth the squeeze. He has said, oh, no, people shouldn't worry about this because, you know, I'd give it to charity, which is just it's kind of like a funny way to just be like, oh, don't worry about it. It's going to a good cause. First of all, you know, you'd have to believe that that's true. But second of all, I mean, it seems like the exact opposite of, for instance, what we were up to with Doge a year ago, where we were cutting off a lot of government monies going to NGOs and private charities because that didn't seem like a good application of taxpayer dollars. So just the idea that oh, well, you know, these Treasury dollars could be better used, you know, at a charity of Donald Trump's choice. I think a lot of people are right to be a little confused by that.
So we also saw some testimony yesterday from an ICE official who resigned earlier in the month because his job was instructing recruits. And he is saying that the training for them is deficient, defective, and broken. And it seems like it is intentionally so. I don't imagine anything will come of this because they're already getting a ton of money and expected to get a whole lot more money from this administration. But what does this mean? What does this say when you've got this guy who's blowing the whistle on it?
Yeah, so this is a super interesting story. This is a guy who, first of all, but before this even happened, he was one of the two whistleblowers who came forward and revealed that ICE had quietly changed its policies to no longer require a judicial warrant to enter people's homes to make immigration arrests. That was a really sort of shocking revelation to a lot of people. It drove a lot of news about a month ago now. And ICE admitted after that, after he and this other guy came forward with these whistleblower allegations, ICE admitted that it had in fact made this policy change, that it was now making these home arrests not with judicial warrants, but just with administrative warrants that an ICE agent himself would be able to sign. So a much, much, much lower bar to be able to enter homes and make arrests. So there's a certain amount of baked in credibility there. The allegation that he came forward with has already been substantiated in that way. The other piece of the puzzle here is that we are right in the middle of a real funding fight over DHS in particular. The whole federal government is funded right now, except for the Department of Homeland Security. It is still partially funded. It got a lot of money in the One Big Beautiful Bill last year. But as far as its normal sort of appropriations budget is concerned, just sort of the normal year over year funding, that is lapsed right now. It's been lapsed for a couple of weeks. And Democrats are digging in their heels and they're saying, look, we are not going to let you fund DHS until you put some new restraints around the way ICE is doing business right now. And it's stuff like they can't wear masks. They have to wear ID. They have to wear a clearly identifiable, you know, uniform that lets you know what agency they belong to. They can't conduct these indiscriminate sweeps. They have to sort of know who they're arresting as they're arresting them, you know, make targeted enforcement operations. It's a lot of stuff like that. They have to wear body cams, and they can't use the body cams to sort of like compile a panopticon type like a list of known protesters and things like that. These are their basic asks. And Democrats think that they have enough sort of political will on their side, enough momentum here, that they can actually sort of dig in a way that they didn't even during the last shutdown. So I would not necessarily agree that there will be no change along these lines. But just to get back to what you brought up originally, this is a big part of sort of the Democratic critique right now. It's not that ICE is like an illegal agency in and of itself, right? I mean, they are the body under good circumstances that is charged with enforcing a bunch of our immigration laws. That should happen. The critique is that because of the enormous swollen amount of like new money that has been given to ICE to staff up wildly, to bring in a bunch of new recruits, and specifically with this whistleblower allegation, because of the cuts that have been made to ICE training and to the amount that the sort of time and attention that's put toward bringing new agents and officers up to speed, that a lot of people are going out on the streets. This is the allegation from Democrats and from these whistleblowers, that a lot of people are going out on the streets basically just unprepared to serve in an effective and a transparent way that is respectful toward the civil rights of the people that's around them. So that's another element in all this as Democrats are trying to get some reforms to ICE in the days and weeks ahead.
Andrew, thank you. We will talk next week.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Andrew Egger, White House correspondent for The Bulwark, every Tuesday or every Monday usually with us. But he is with us weekly on KMOX.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris and Amy show on KMOX. I got John Hancock today, who's in with me. Amy will be back tomorrow.
That's what they say.
Yeah, I guess you never really know with her. She's a difficult lady to pin down. We don't know where she is, what she does, why she has all this extra time off. It's astounding. Gas House Gang happens at 12. Bernie, Tom, and me, Matt Pauly, will check in from Cardinals spring training.
Lovely.
We'll be talking to you ahead of a Billikens game tonight. We should let you know that at 4:55 on 11:20 a.m., you can hear Cardinals baseball. So it'll be the Cardinals and the Nationals today in Grapefruit League. And then at 5:45 on 104.1 FM, the Billikens will play. They are at Dayton. Hey, I got a good one for you, John.
Yeah, bring it.
So every year, at least for the last several years, Chicago does the city does a contest with voters, and they allow people to submit names for snowplows.
Yes.
So we talked about the submissions that happened about a week or two ago.
Now, is this every snowplow or one particular snowplow?
They name a handful.
Okay.
They name a handful. All right. And so people had offered a bunch of entries. There were 13,000 entries and then 39,000 voters.
Wow.
The number one vote getter was Abolish ICE.
Oh.
Which is it's a fantastic nickname for a snowplow.
Yeah.
It's so good. And then Stephen Colbert.
Yeah.
Pope Frio XIV.
Wow.
The Blizzard of Oz. And Caleb Chilliams. You like that one?
Yeah, I do like that one.
Caleb, why don't we do... Well, I guess we don't have enough snow plows to name, do we?
Well, I think they just bought some. I think Mayor Spencer bought some to go on the side streets for once.
Yeah, they have to contract people who have plows on their trucks. What prompts a person to just buy a plow for their truck?
Well, I mean, you get snow out there. My neighbor down the street, God bless him.
Is this a good? I mean,
he brought his little snowblower over when we had that 8 inches of snow.
How many people? I don't know.
What?
It seems like a pretty big purchase to just buy a plow for your truck.
Well, I mean, you know what? When you need one, you have one.
I guess.
And sometimes you need one.
How much does a plow cost?
To fit on the front of your truck?
Yeah.
It's probably not all that much.
No.
I think probably, I don't know, $1,200.
Frank Ladd says they do it to look cool.
Well, there is that. I mean, there's nothing like dropping that plow
now,
down.
You don't just leave the plow on your truck all the time, right?
You could. It's not illegal, as far as I know.
I don't think it would be illegal.
You know, and you got a plow right there, and you know, it's snow. There might be a deer. You just take that deer
and scoop up.
Yeah, scoop that sucker up and toss it off on the side of the road.
I'm always fascinated when there is a deer who's been hit by a car, and it's on the side of the highway. So somebody pushes it off to the side, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And then do they go, like, who picks it up?
Animal control.
Animal control is responsible.
One of the more responsive parts of our local government.
Do you know, I just assumed that animal control only dealt with live animals.
No, buddy.
They go deal with the dead ones,
well,
too?
Well, you got the possums out there. You got the deer and the, you know.
I just kind of figured they would take the animals that were causing issues because there were too many of them. I didn't think they would go dispatch of the dead ones on the side of the road.
We had a raccoon. We had a raccoon in the attic years ago and called animal control. The guy came over. The guy had, it looked like a hazmat suit. It was almost an armor around him with a big thing on his head. You know, he's head to toe. He's got all this protection. He goes up. He gets the raccoon. Takes his stuff off, and he's got a award badge on his sleeve. And I said, "What's that?" And he said, "Well, I've never been bitten."
Oh, see? Wow. You don't want to get bitten by those things.
You do not.
All right. So, Amas Tanuma, I have bad news for you.
What?
Amas Tanuma, who is the CEO of Better Experience Group, and he authored the book called Hold, The Suffering Economy of Customer Service.
Oh, yes. That Amas Tanuma.
Yeah, well, you had your customer service issue.
I did.
St. Louis County.
Yes.
He was going to join the show, and it turns out we had the date wrong.
Oh. So he'll be here on Thursday.
He's going to be here on Thursday.
Amas Tanuma. I will be. Peach, don't worry about it.
I had the wrong Amas Tanuma for today.
Yeah.
Well, we have a different Amas Tanuma?
There's, Amas Tanuma. I think I ordered that one time.
So Amas is not going to be around to help you out with your customer service issue, I am sorry to say.
He'll be here Thursday, though.
And John will probably be filling in that day, too.
You just never know what's going to happen around this place.
We have different messengers here.
Uh-huh.
This message from Chris, who is watching on YouTube, who says a snow plow is $4,500.
Oh!
And last snow, he says, he made $8,300, so he's paid for it already.
See there? That's entrepreneurism right there. I love that about
good
America.
Job, Chris.
What a country this is.
Good job, Chris. It is the Chris and Amy Show. John Hancock and I, we are going to be with you for the next 29 minutes.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
NCAA tournament is coming up.
It is
just less than a month away, and there will be a first and second round sessions that
right
happen
here
in St. Louis, right at Enterprise Center, March 20th and March 22nd.
Sweet.
So that is the Friday-Sunday session. So looking forward to it. And, you know, hopefully all the stars will align and St. Louis can be here. The Pelicans could be here.
Illinois could be here.
I think Illinois will end up here as long as they maintain their high seed, which they probably will. So we thought, and we every year on this show, John, we put together a tournament.
Yes, you do.
Around tournament time.
Sometimes a great controversy.
It's a huge controversy. We had a sandwich. We had the Sandwich Piscandal from a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
We have done pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did the most St. Louis things in our Field of 64-40 tournament.
Yeah, the Arch won that one, didn't it?
Did the Arch win?
I don't remember that one, to be honest.
We can't remember.
I can't remember.
I remember the pizza controversy, though. Do you remember that? There were two Alfonso's pizzas.
Oh, that's right.
And then we had to do a tiebreaker, I guess, at the end, and the Alfonso's in Troy, Illinois won.
Yep. Alfonso's in Troy, and there was another one not too far away from there. So there were a couple of different Alfonso's. So our goal here is to not have any controversy.
Wait. Not owned by the same people?
Correct. No.
So right. you have a restaurant named Alfonso's.
And spelled differently, too.
Oh, well, they're okay. That's the answer to my question.
Yeah. So we are going to try this year very hard to not have controversies. Here's what we've decided to do.
All right.
And we are in the submission stage. So the selection committee has yet to get together to decide who will be in our tournament of the best bars in the St. Louis area.
Oh.
So we are looking for your submissions of what your favorite bar is in the St. Louis area. And then we are going to have the selection committee get together and put the field together. Uh-huh. And we'll hopefully have a, 64, we will have a champion.
64 bars in the field?
We are looking for 64 bars.
And what about chains? Are chains allowed? Like a Bar Louie?
You can submit whatever you want to submit. Right. The selection committee has to go through the process here. So... Hmm. Tell us what your best bar is. You can do so on Twitter, at ChrisAmyKMOX. We have a tweet up about it. You can find that tweet and respond to it, or you can just tweet at us. You can text us at 314-436-7900. Those are probably the best ways to submit the bar that you think should win in the field of 64.
What's that cool little tiny dark bar there at the Cheshire Inn? What's that thing called?
The Fox and the Hound?
Yes, the Fox and the Hound. It's a lovely place.
Is it Basso downstairs?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Is Fox and Hound next to it?
Yeah,
it...
but upstairs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's right. But it's just a quaint, it's mm-hmm. like walking into London.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember the old Cheshire Inn when there was that little bar there.
Yeah.
And I guess it's the same bar.
It has to be.
It was just called Cheshire, if I remember right. Mm. And you know who I ran into? Tom Ackerman.
Tom Ackerman.
I was 21 years old, so Tom must have been 22.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, Tom Ackerman. I was interning at the station.
Oh, so that you...
So I knew him.
You knew Tom Ackerman. Yeah, and so there he was at the Cheshire.
Ran into him out and about.
Huh.
He was out having a good time. I was out having a good time. So
well, see there. Yeah, how was your internship here? Did you think that, you know, I'll be back?
No. Well, I didn't know. I interned... On the weekends, mostly,
yeah,
I interned for Dan McLaughlin.
Yeah?
Because he was hosting Sports Open Line. It was prior to Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had done some, maybe a little blues stuff on TV at the time, but not like play-by-play. I think it was more
and at that time,
reporting or something along those lines.
At that time, was KMOX carrying the Cardinals? Because there was that little interval where...
1998.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we still had the Cardinals.
We still did, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what I got to do basically was when there was a home game, I would just go over to the stadium and take a recorder and a mic and go to the locker room and be amazed that I was there.
That was pretty cool. That had to be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Nice.
That was a lot of fun. So I interned at that time. And then Tom was just, he was like a year or two into the job.
Uh-huh.
You know, he was working in the sports department. So anyway, we need you to submit your bars. Submit your bars to us.
All right.
Let us know. And then we'll put the field together.
How would one go about submitting a bar?
Well, John, all you have to do is text the show
at
314-436-7900 or tweet at us. You should be following us, too.
At Chris and Amy.
At Chris Amy KMOX.
No and.
Correct.
At Chris Amy KMOX.
At Chris Amy KMOX. You can tweet at us there and let us know what the best bar in the St. Louis area is. All right.
Yeah, 64 seems like a lot.
Well, we've probably got 2,000 bars here.
Do you think we have that many bars?
How many bars in St. Louis?
I mean, are you counting restaurants that have bars?
Mm.
Look, just submit the bar.
Because you go into, Tucker's place and they got a bar right there.
That may or may not make it. Because there might be 64 better bars than Tucker's.
So are there food requirements? If more of your business is food, are you disqualified from being a bar, or does most of your business have to be beverages?
We are going with what I think people mostly identify as a bar.
Hmm. So now we're identifying as a bar.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yes.
It's not a case where you either are a bar or you're not a bar.
You might have both. You
can identify as a bar, and now all of a sudden you're a bar.
That's right.
Even though
that's how it works today, don't you know?
Yeah, I guess. Even though you're out there serving, 75% of your revenue is food. No,
it's how people see you.
You identify as a bar.
Well, no. How do people view you? Do they look at you as a bar or not?
Well, that's not in the eye of the beholder. Apparently, it's in the eye of the establishment.
No, it's in the eye of the beholder.
If people view you as a bar... We've already got controversy. I think this isn't controversial at all.
I think this is a very simple concept to understand.
I think there needs to be a bar top in the restaurant or bar.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they all have bar tops.
So that it's a bar, yeah.
My grandpa had the coolest bar at his pool hall. I mean, it had lions' heads carved on the edge.
Well, you can't submit it because nobody knows about it. Nobody cares.
No, it's not in St. Louis.
Where is it?
It was in Rolla, Missouri.
Oh, yeah, doesn't count.
Cox Billiards.
You've got to. I think the biggest controversy. The biggest controversy will be, what do you consider to be St. Louis area? Because you get far enough out.
Yeah.
We're not. I mean, we're getting past Wentzville. I don't know if that's St. Louis area.
Is DeSoto considered St. Louis?
How far is DeSoto?
That's a ways.
45 minutes?
I don't know.
It's down south in Jefferson County.
Well,
so the home of former Governor Jay Nixon.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe he can submit a bar.
Yeah.
If he wants
to.
They
might own a bar, the family down there. So, we probably have some bar owners listening to us right this moment.
What? Oh, I'm sure there better not be. They better be at work. It's 11:40. You got to get your bar ready for service.
What time do bars open? I mean, if you're not a restaurant.
It depends. Some of the bars...
Yeah. Well,
actually, a lot of them all over the country, and it happened here, too. A bunch of bars in my neighborhood, they opened at like 6:30.
For the hockey game.
For the hockey game on Sunday. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But that's not the norm.
That's not the norm.
Because, a bar, I guess, has to be open for lunch.
And
right? Although people don't drink at lunch like they used to. Remember the old 3-martini lunch that they used to have? That doesn't happen anymore.
It's not the 60s, is it?
No.
Okay, so one of those bars that does open pretty regularly early for soccer matches, we mentioned the Amsterdam. I would almost guarantee Amsterdam will make its way
they'll
up.
Be on
it's
it.
A big time.
What's
bar
that place that Jay Gow goes to watch the Buffalo Bills?
Shamrock Pub.
The Shamrock.
Shamrock.
Pub. There's
might
another
be.
One.
It could be.
Huh.
Yeah. So submit your bar. Which bar is the best bar in the St. Louis area?
And that would include, I guess, bar and grill, right?
Sure.
Bar and grill could be a bar, even though it's a bar and a grill.
Well, a lot of bars have food.
A lot of bars have grills.
It doesn't have to be a bar with no food.
But you can have a bar without a grill, but fairly rare. And would a grill increase the value of the bar?
I think so.
Yeah, in terms of voting.
All that.
So if you're a bar without a grill... You might be out of luck here in the Camo X, whatever we call this silly thing.
All we have to do is put it to a vote. The people will decide.
People will speak. I do like the fact that the people speak, except when I run for office.
Well,
but I do appreciate the people speaking out there.
They looked at you and they said, nah.
Nah.
And we're not gonna do all that.
I live in the only state in the country where John Hancock can't get elected. It's unbelievable.
Poor John.
It's ridiculous.
Sometimes we get incredibly unhelpful text messages to 314-436-7900. We are asking for the best bar in St. Louis because that will be our tournament coming up here.
Best
bar in the St. Louis area.
Yeah.
So not just the city of St. Louis, the entire area. And we want your submissions to the text line at 314-436-7900 or on Twitter at ChrisAmyKMOX. This texter says, the bar is not very high on this contest.
Hmm.
Yeah, we're not doing puns. Oh, yeah, we should mention this, too.
Yes, we should.
What? Illinois side Metro East bars are included.
They're in. You're out there in Edwardsville. You're out there in whatever else is out there.
We should do it this way. I thought
Granite
about...
Granite City, why not?
Granite City?
Well, we got 314 Day coming up.
Yeah.
And we'll celebrate that, obviously.
Belleville?
And, yeah. And we did a 618 tournament.
East St. Louis?
We should maybe think about that in June. But we'll have something different for that, I think. But we'll go ahead and include the Metro East in our tournament. Maybe a lot of submissions.
Oh,
yeah, I know.
You're going to have,
it's going to be way more than 64.
You're going to have hundreds to go through, yeah. And I don't know how the selection committee is going to be able to wheedle down.
Well, the committee,
ridiculous list.
John, the committee is going to take into account how many submissions are repeated. Now, if somebody says, well, oh, my gosh, you've got to go to.
Oh, and so if somebody's got 16 people say that, then that bar has to be,
it's gotta
in
be
the
in.
Tournament.
Yeah.
And is that how you go about ranking them, 1 to 16?
Well, we'll see.
I think the committee should go visit each and every one of these bars throughout the week and call it a work trip and decide for ourselves.
And I'm sure the good people at Odyssey would be happy to reimburse you for that.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the committee will oblige and then they will go ahead and pay for our trips?
Yeah.
I bet not.
Probably not.
Well, we're not the FBI. They're not gonna send us to all these places and then pay for it. Well, it's a work trip. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Maybe we'll do some remotes. Who knows?
Yeah,
that'd be fun.
Oh, now there you go.
That'd be fun.
Nothing like being in a bar between 9 o'clock and noon.
It's actually depends, John.
Yes.
On a Friday, you can start your weekend early if you want.
You can. You absolutely can.
You got to be very careful.
I start my weekend early every Friday with the two of you, the three of you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel like a real weekend when you come in here on a Friday? Because
to us,
it feels like, you know, it's child's
play. Because we usually, unless I've got, you know, duty calling, we usually try and find a snooker table.
That's right, you
after
do.
After the show on Fridays. By the way, happened to play a few frames yesterday.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah.
Michael's shooting very well yesterday. He almost won. There it was, the pink and the black to end the game. And I made a remarkable bank shot the entire length of the table.
Yeah.
On the pink and then the black for the win. It was, you know.
Did anybody else see it?
Michael did.
Just the two of you.
Well, the guy at the next table, I'm sure, saw it.
Yeah.
I mean, Michael thought it was junk. He thought it was a lucky shot. No. I played that shot, and it was a gutsy shot.
Do you not have to call out your shot ahead?
No, not in snooker.
Okay. But in billiards, you kind of have to, don't you?
Usually, only on like the eight ball. If you're playing eight ball, you really only have to call the eight ball.
Okay.
So, yeah.
The American Rocket took down the Irish
Assassin. American Rocket did, in fact, take down the Irish Assassin yesterday afternoon.
Yeah.
It was a glorious sight to behold.
I don't know. Can you really be an assassin if everybody sees you coming? There's not much you can do.
Well, I don't know. I didn't see him coming. He actually, you know, in all seriousness, he shot pretty well yesterday.
A texter here says, I have to say the best bar in the St. Louis area is in my basement.
Mm.
Well, you have a good time down there, sir.
I'm not going there.
We're not going to your basement. Because if we end up in a basement, we may not get out of it.
Well, that's true. You just never know.
You cannot trust the basement of a stranger.
Well, yeah.
John Hancock, thanks for hanging out the last
Buddy,
couple
it's been
days.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, we'll see you on Friday with Michael.
Yes, you will.
But we'll have a good time on
then,
Friday.
Then the following week, I'm off to Jupiter, Florida.
All right.
Well, that's right. You got a little frat house going.
I do.
Hancock and Kelly with Glover.
Yeah.
Debaucherous.
You're staying in the same house, right?
Pretty much.
Same bed, too, I heard.
No, I hope not.
Oh.
Well, you know, you could sleep three wide, no big deal.
We only overlap one night, and then I'm gone, and they hang out.
Well, thanks, pal. It's good to see you. We'll see you Friday
Always
again.
Always a pleasure, Ron.
That's John Hancock. If you missed anything, it's going to be on the Odyssey app for you. Just download it, or iHeart app, or wherever you get your podcast, KMOX.com as well. We will be back tomorrow with Amy. Amy Marks-Kors returns tomorrow with me, Chris Ranji.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.